Hello, and
hello.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Or Happy Holidays, or whatever
you're doing. Yeah.
If you're just having a nice day off.
Yeah,
that's good too.
Nice. Yes. Yeah. Well done. And, we thought to kind of offset the prospect of eating large amounts of food, that we bring you something that we hitherto had only made available to our patrons, which might bring on some sense of heartburn insofar as it involves molten lava.
That's true. Christmas is a time for shit movies, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they usually in the UK on BBC, they have a good movie after the Queen's speech, now the King's speech.
Not my Queen.
King Prince Charles's speech. Yeah. And it's like a Toy Story or a Back to the Future or something good like
Home
that.
Alone.
But the rest of the Christmas TV schedule is usually pretty shitty films.
When I worked at the BBC, can we say that? Yeah. When I worked at the BBC, there used to be a race because at the BBC you get a free copy of the Radio Times, which is the programme listing magazine.
The Christmas
Radio
one, Times.
Double issue. Yeah. And you go through it and you'd look at all the shit films they're having to do to fill up that bit between Christmas and New Year, bit.
Because all the regular shows are having a bit of a Christmas break, aren't they?
Yeah.
You've got some specials for, like, Strictly or that kind of thing. But then you've got loads more scheduled than usual because all of the regular stuff is not on.
Yes.
So they fill it with crappy films. Yeah. So in that vein,
here's one.
In that milieu, here is a shitty film that we thought we would talk about, which has Dean Cain in it and is about aeroplanes and volcanoes.
And the link with with Fallacious Trump is kind of it's a tangential link because Dean Cain, former TV Superman, allegedly joined ICE. Did he actually join, or did he fail?
Well, at the very least,
medical?
He's been promoting them.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah,
in the same way that Trump said he'd throw himself in front of. the shooter's bullets. And on that basis, we thought we would look at this film. So here's episode one of a series of episodes of us in our usual way going through it with a fine tooth comb.
Well, this film is, I mean, it's far too bad for us to rush through. We have to take our time and dissect it. We have to give it the respect it deserves, which is negative respect.
Yes.
So, this is part one. There'll be another part coming to you on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And then it will be back to regular
programming.
Fallacious Trump episodes.
So enjoy that. And if you'd like, obviously, to listen to the rest of them, because why wouldn't you? Because it's that riveting. And you can join as a patron. Go to patreon.com and
/ F Trump.
And
where there's plenty of other films that we've talked about
in immense amounts of detail. And also books
and all kinds of other stuff.
Yes. And you get patron editions of expanded editions of the regular episodes.
That's true. About an extra half hour an episode.
There's lots and lots and lots of stuff. It's well worth it. God, I'd do it.
Yeah, I don't need to.
Right.
I listen to it anyway when I'm editing.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
That's
I listen
bad
to
enough.
It once you've edited it, yeah.
Yeah.
So, don't listen to us. You know, if we didn't do that, we would obviously sign up, and so you should. So enjoy this, and we'll see you in the new year. Enjoy the Christmas break.
Bye.
It's stuck on autopilot.
Well, that's not good.
Just let me fly.
I minored in genius, but I majored in awesome.
Take your seats and buckle up. This is about to get very interesting.
Listen, Doc. If there were any volcanic activity, we would already know all about it.
Hello, and welcome to a patron special where, for once, not talking about old fallacies and new examples, because we've done a few of those. There are more to come of those.
Yeah.
But we did promise that
people
we had...
keep pointing out even newer ones.
Yeah, yeah. We did promise that we had other things in mind.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things.
I so wish now that you hadn't.
thought of this.
Well,
we
kind of think, yeah, there
oh,
is
Oh, yeah,
that.
It'd be good. Yeah.
So yeah, good. So this so was
the
whole, inspired.
The premise, yes, the premise of this.
The reason that we came to it is was Dean Cain joining ICE, basically. Dean Cain or kind of doing his you know, saying he's joining ICE. I don't think he technically has, but he was like promoting ICE. And he did an assault course.
Right.
Which looked like either an assault course for dogs or children.
Yeah. Because he's not that tall. So, no, no. Yeah. Yeah.
And he struggled through it and really did very poorly. And then, video of him doing poorly on this really quite basic assault course went a bit viral.
Right.
And in fact, my kids heard about it through that and asked me who's Dean Cain, because, you know, he hasn't been relevant for decades. And
I know. That's, yes.
And, yeah. So my answer to that was he is the worst person to play Superman, by which I meant the worst human being who has been Superman.
Right.
And I was like, I specify, I don't mean like the worst Superman, like the worst at playing Superman. I mean the worst human being who has put on that costume. And then they said, oh, well, who's been the worst at being Superman? And I thought for a bit.
Oh.
And it was like, no, actually, it is also that. It is also Dean Cain is the worst Superman and the worst person who has been Superman. So, fits both boxes. So I thought maybe we should look at a Dean Cain film, because, you know, they're going to be bad. Know.
Yeah, because he hasn't done Superman since.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, it is nearly decades. What is it? 2008.
It was the '90s. It was.
No,
he was. Yeah, Lois and
that
Clark.
Long ago. Oh my God.
It was the '90s. Yeah. So
wow.
I thought, you know, he's not on the A-list of people who they cast in films. So the films he gets are going to be shit. So, you know, there's bound to be some good value in it. And so I had a look at the kind of ratings of the films that he's credited on IMDb for. And so I had a look at kind of some of those that were poorly rated. And I thought, well, what I can do is I can look at Rotten Tomatoes, and they do them in like, you know, in order, you can rank
in order of terror,
in order of shit,
in order of terrible shit,
and the worst on the list was God's Not Dead, the one with the lowest ranking. But I've seen a bit of that, and I am not prepared to watch all of it.
Right, okay, and this one was all right.
This one is better.
Yeah. You were prepared,
according
to
Rotten Tomatoes rankings. This one ranks higher than God's Not Dead. And it is Airplane versus Volcano. And as soon as I saw that title, I was like, oh, well, obviously we're doing that one. We have to watch that.
Of course. Yeah. Because that's, you know, when you do that, when you're in a pub and you do that, who would win a fight between, you know, Camilla Parker Bowles and Lady Diana and or
Diana,
you know,
obviously.
Godzilla and a rhino or that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that the one question that we've never asked until now is who would win a fight between an airplane and a volcano?
Absolutely. I mean, to be fair, there have been a few airplane versus volcano matchups in real life, and airplanes haven't come off very well.
Right. Yes. Because the one with that immensely long Icelandic volcanic cloud.
Yeah, I was gonna. For some reason, I almost thought I could do that off the top of my head. I can't. I definitely can't.
Yeah,
it's got some J's and some F's in it, but there's no way.
I've gone
at it.
For Clampire Porguin, Clantasilio Gogogoch.
It's a edge of theatre something.
That's the one. Yeah.
But no,
it'll turn up on a Björk album at some point.
Oh, absolutely. Surely. It grounded a lot of planes anyway. And so, in real life history of airplanes versus volcanoes, the airplanes typically don't do so well.
Something to do with needing fresh air to go through jet engines and stuff
something
like that.
Yeah. They don't like the ash so much.
Yeah. It did fill me with glee that our plane movie,
yes,
which we did for, I don't know, £4.65 or something, looks distinctly more convincing.
Oh, absolutely. I think we will talk about, when we get to the section with the plane,
yeah,
we will do a compare and contrast of what we did when we made a film set on a plane versus what they did and why we did it better.
Yeah. Yeah, because we paid attention to things like physics and framing.
That was one of the...
Not shooting behind a table.
We were aware of our ambition is one of the things that was part of why that worked better. But anyway, this is, as I say, Airplane versus Volcano. Dean Cain is on the airplane side. And this is an asylum film. Asylum are pretty well known for making low budget shitty films. Most of the time they know they're shit. Like everyone's kind of in on it. Like Sharknado is one of their films.
Right.
There wasn't, I don't think, a person who was working on Sharknado who thought, this is great.
We're making the People best
are,
film.
Yeah,
ever.
We are doing we are doing good
we're
work.
Doing good
here.
Work. Yeah.
They knew what they were doing.
It's kind of it reminds me of the whole of the Bollywood movement to kind of redo action movies. So there will be I saw a Bollywood version of a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Bond movies are fairly long, but this thing was 4 hours long.
Yeah, presumably it had songs and a love triangle.
Yes, exactly.
Added into
Of course. But,
Bollywood does not give a shit about copyright. My favorite Bollywood movie is called Kante, and it is a mixture of Heat, Reservoir Dogs, and The Usual Suspects, all rolled into one film. It's fucking amazing. I highly recommend it.
With song and dance routines.
Fully proper ripped baddies. Off. Scenes taken directly from those films. But in very much the same way, Asylum does a thing that they call mockbusters, or has become called mockbusters, which is where they piggyback on an existing IP and make a kind of off-brand version of it, like a little version of the film that's coming out. They did Android Cop instead of RoboCop when the RoboCop reboot came out. They've done Transmorphers instead of Transformers. They did Snakes on a Train when Snakes on a Plane was out. And in fact, the last film, the most recent film that was done by the Kondalik brothers, of which this is their directorial and writing feature debut. The latest film they worked on together was called Hornet, which was about a giant robot saving the world from aliens. And it came out exactly the same time as Bumblebee, the Transformers spin-off.
There you go.
They basically make films for short-sighted people who might accidentally walk into the wrong film.
It also reminds me of the when I was growing up, there were LPs on the MFP label, I think, Music for Pleasure, and they were like the Top of the Pops series before. Now that's what I call music,
right?
Which are compilations of actual original tracks. There were the Top of the Pops series, which would do really poor versions of. They would do cover versions of the songs, and then you could buy it for like £1.29. So you would have an album with all the latest chart toppers on it, but they're not by the original artists; they're by session musicians. And the only saving grace was that on the front would be, this was the '70s, so it would be a scantily clad model in a crocheted bikini or something. And
one of the dancers off Top of the Pops, was it? One of the Pan's people?
Yeah, could well have been. That kind of a thing. So they, and and with sort of strangely blue tint to the to the color. So it was, you know, it was awful and cheap. I mean, they're probably collector's items now, and they kind of, they did it in all seriousness as a, this is for people that can't afford to buy the real thing. So what would, right. for the price of a single, we can give you an album full of all of the hits. And they didn't even pretend, they didn't even say these aren't the originals. They would just say Top of the Pops, and it would list all of the latest chart topping songs. And you go, oh my God, look at that. All of that for £1.29. And you come back and you put it on the turntable, and it would just go, oh no, it's awful.
Yeah.
I've fallen for it again.
Well, yeah. Very much in the same vein, this is awful. And it is, unlike Sharknado, I don't know. I mean, I suspect there's a few people on this one who thought they're working on a proper film. This is a proper film, and they're you know, doing good work. And this doesn't have its tongue in its cheek at all. They are taking it deadly seriously. They're just doing it incredibly badly. But they don't seem to be.
You know, if you're going to do comedy, you've got to take it seriously. But they,
they're not doing
comedy. They think they're doing serious blockbuster stuff.
Yeah, there's no sense that they're having fun with it, or that they think it will be fun because it's bad. They seem to be doing their best, but their best is shit.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like.
And also, who was that? Who's that film critic that we oft admired, who was criticised by the filmmakers that he critiqued, but because they said, "Well, you don't know what goes into making a film," and he said, "But that's kind of hardly the point." But what he did do was decide to make a film. So he made a film by writing down
Joe Queenan.
Yes, writing down all of the things that ought to go into a good film, and then putting them in a film, like stubbing out a cigarette in a fried egg, stepping out of a car into a puddle, that kind of stuff. And he just like strung all these, that's the past tense of strung, all of these moments together in a plot, and watching this movie, they've just done that thing. They've just written down all of the cliches and then said, right, well, we've got to have this, and this is the bit where we've got to go to there, and nobody has questioned them
I guess,
what the fuck are you doing?
I mean, it is a fucking mess. They have, in that respect, yes. There is, I mean, simultaneously a lot going on and really nothing happening at all. And it is, there's subplots that don't go anywhere and have nothing to do at all. Yeah. There's, none of the characters matter whatsoever.
No,
they all kind of have backstories in a way, but none of them will matter at any point.
I thought about 15 minutes in, okay, I'm really going to give it a go to see if I could care for any of these characters.
Oh, yeah. Good luck.
Because we've got all the standard characters. I've felt nothing for them. And I think, is that me being a hard-bitten, complete cynical bastard? Or is that just bad writing, even worse acting, and terrible plotting? And I think it's probably the latter. Because it was just, oh, my God. Right. And you could almost, now we need to see this person, now we need to be introduced to that person, now we need the baddie, now we need
basically
the good guy.
If you think about Pearl Harbor, the shitty Michael Bay film with Ben Affleck,
right,
which was already bad, but instead of the, I don't know, gonna say $150 million they spent on that film,
right, yes,
you've got $150. And you couldn't get Ben Affleck and his amazing acting chops. You had to go for Dean Cain instead.
And then
go, like, do the same thing for all of the other actors who were already shit in Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Replace them with much worse actors.
Cheaper versions. yeah,
basically, it's, that's what you've got here. It is the messy, shitty, badly written, badly acted thing that, on Pearl Harbor, it had some good explosions, and this does not.
True. No. And also, given that we leveled the same criticisms to Blackbird, I miss Blackbird. I had to kind of go back and watch a bit order to kind of wash my mind out.
Absolutely.
Afterwards.
I feel like we were too harsh on Michael Flatley.
Yeah.
Having seen this.
Oh, no. Yeah, but at least Michael Flatley's, the kind of raison d'etre was he wanted to write himself into a spy movie. He wanted to be James Bond. There's a sort of hands-off thing. You know, do these guys want to be the Wachowski sisters? Do they want to be the Coen brothers? Do they, you know, what are they?
Fact that this was 2014 and the films they're making at the moment are exactly the same kind of films as this. I think they're perfectly happy being the Kondalik brothers. I think they're fine with it.
Yeah.
They've made their peace with the fact that they are not going to get any better at this.
Yeah. Have they? Are they convinced that these films are bad, or is it the audience doing the work for them and going to see them in a kind of Plan 9 from Outer Space kind of way, going to see it because they're so bad, so that you can just enjoy laughing at the screen?
I think asylum movies have a cult following. They are. Some people really like watching bad movies.
Yeah, we're counted amongst those.
But yeah, with Asylum, you're pretty much guaranteed to get a film that is humorously bad.
Yeah,
and that they've knocked it out of the park with this one. It is extremely bad, and we are going to laugh at it. But yeah, it did make me feel like, or I think we did say when we were watching Blackbird that although obviously the writing is atrocious and Michael Flatley can't do anything, the people who were actually shooting it, and to some extent the editing when Michael wasn't looking over his shoulder and going, just keep the camera on me for a few more seconds.
It was
done by professionals. It was made, there were clearly people on Blackbird who knew what they were doing. They knew how to light a scene. They'd seen a camera before. They were aware of other films. This is not that. It did make me feel like we were too harsh on Michael Flatley. And it didn't annoy me in the same way as Wonder Woman, 1984.
Right.
Because again, that one, the people, I mean, that was absolutely made by people who knew how to make a film.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost all of them had probably worked on significant numbers of films or major films before.
Yeah.
Including all the actors and Patty Jenkins and, you know, all of the people involved, really. And they still managed to turn out that utter piece of crap. That's part of what annoyed me about Wonder Woman 1984. This one, they've made a couple of shorts, but this is their first feature. It's got Dean Cain in it, it's got Robin Givens in it, and everyone else, their excuse for being as shit as they are is because this is probably the first thing they've done, or they've never been directed by a professional director, or, you know, they don't have the skill to make a good film. So this is the best they can do.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, so, and you kind of get that sense when the opening titles, it put me in mind of like an evangelical, a movie made by, you know, evangelical TV Christians
a movie set in hell,
yes,
by evangelical Christians,
yeah.
Yeah, because everything's on fire in the credits.
Yeah, and you've got the kind of, that typeface is. I mean, it's not Comic Sans. It's kind of, it's got serifs, but it's gold. And that, if you know, if Trump had opening titles, this is what they'd look like.
Yeah,
it's that, you know, there's lens flare aplenty, it's the kind of text that we all used when PowerPoint got animations. And what's it, 2014? So it's early After Effects kind of stuff. It said, oh yeah, we can put this thing and we can make it go into the background and we can make the light reflects off the gold effect text as it as it goes away from us. And it, oh man,
it's very 90s opening titles in this 2014 film.
So, and that, and but, I was amused by the fact that there is a costume designer credit. And also the... It's,
well, you
one
don't
of
think
those...
these were their own clothes, do you?
Well, because they're all of a piece and they all make a statement collectively. Yes, they could well have been, costumes. Yeah, have you got a white shirt? Yeah, bring that then. That's kind of what they did. Yeah. Yeah.
So after the credits finish, the first shot we get is a stock shot from Pond 5, where they got all of their stock film from, and we
did
will
they
see
pay
a lot
for them, or did they just zoom in past the watermark?
I mean, it is there. This one is about this one. Well, it's £29 on Pond 5. This particular clip for us. So yeah, what's that? Like $40, something like that. So
yeah.
I think they found in the budget. Let's say that they did use a lot of stock shots, but they got their money out of it because they used every single one of them multiple times.
Multiple times.
We will see the same exact shots again and again and again. And this one is of like moving the camera, moving across the water towards an island. And it says that we see on screen that this is Kaula Rock. And it says 20 miles west of Niihau. It's close. 22 miles southwest of Niihau, but sure, that's all right.
It's but like Krakatoa east of Java.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what they're kind of making a reference to? Yeah. In fact, Krakatoa is actually west of Java, but you know, we won't go into that. But
this footage is not of Kaula Rock.
Hawaii, no.
Well, it is of Hawaii. It is of Kohala, the northwestern peninsula of the Big Island, of Hawaii itself.
Right.
So that's not that far off. It's the same. It's the right part of the world. It's probably about 150 miles away from Kaula Rock, which is right the other end of the Hawaiian archipelago. It is. Yeah. It's off. Yeah, it's 22 miles south. West of Niihau, which is the kind of the furthest big island away from Hawaii. So it's not bad.
Is that shot not available? Is the real shot of the
I don't. I mean,
available on
I've seen
5.
Stills of it. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see any actual footage of it.
Right.
But also, if you did get a shot of it, it wouldn't look like there was anywhere that the guy we're about to meet could be standing on a beach anywhere. So.
It's
a very, very small place. Kaua Rock is like a quarter of a square mile. It's tiny.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
So
I was convinced it was whales that, not the animal, the country, that shot. I was thinking, oh, well, that looks like that kind of fractured sedimentary rock end.
But no, this is an actual Hawaiian island. And the fact that they got it within a couple of hundred miles... This is as authentic as this film will get. It is all downhill from here.
From here.
Every single thing they try and show us or do from this point on will be less realistic than how close they got with this stock shot.
Yeah.
So,
because you might be, somewhat seduced by the title Airplane versus Volcano. That there's going to be like a big tussle with a volcano, and there is, but the film is like an hour and 30 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, they spin it out to a nearly an hour and a half. Yeah,
Yeah, and they're flying constantly at, you know, aircraft speed. So this volcano...
141 miles an hour is the cruising speed of a Airbus A340.
Right. So so the thing's got to be hundreds of miles across.
Hundreds of miles, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we will get into why it doesn't need to be quite that big.
Right.
I mean, it's a stupid fucking reason, but there is a reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it does take... We are constantly flying past the same volcanoes for a long time. And but first of all, before we even see a volcano, we see a man on the island, on the beach, which there isn't a beach on Koh Ila Rock. But anyway, on the beach, he is burying what looks like a metal thermos flask in the sand, but he's glued some calculator buttons to the top of it.
I thought it was the front of a hotel safe that he's nicked the door off and stuck it to
the little buttons that are haphazardly glued on top of it are literally square root percent dot minus divide multiply. They didn't use the plus. Memory plus, memory minus, memory cancel, and memory recall. Those are the buttons.
Literally are
they are literally
buttons.
Taken off a calculator and stuck to the top of a thermos flask.
Brilliant.
This apparently is a seismograph sensor.
Right.
Because he is a volcanologist and he is checking for seismic activity by burying this thing, which I don't know why you would need a square root sign on a seismograph, but... That's what, you know, you need to sometimes maybe take the square root of the earthquake.
Yeah.
And then divide it by the percentage.
I haven't got an exponential in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the tremors are going to be so tiny, they want to multiply them.
It's hard to say.
Or something.
But he buries it about an inch under the top of the sand. Which, again, I don't feel like it would do anything. Just leave it on the beach.
If you're going to do that, you might as well just leave it on the surface.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? It looks less scientific, though, to have a flask with calculator buttons on it.
So he buries it under some sand and then sticks like a red broom handle in the sand, presumably as a marker so he can find his seismograph again.
Because it must be expensive.
Sure. I mean, it's a made up thing, so it could be any amount you want.
We'll need that again.
Because this isn't how they do measuring earthquakes at all.
No.
I mean, you've seen, the thing is, there is plenty of footage on Pond 5 of actual seismograph machines that they could have used. But the thing you've seen that's the classic lie detector test thing where there's a needle going up and down past a thing. That's basically what a seismograph is. They've always been like that, and they still use those kinds of things. It is a machine that literally, when the earth quakes, there is a part of the machine that has inertia, so it stays where it was. The machine moves, and that scratches the things onto the roll of paper as it goes past at a set rate so that you get a certain amount per second and you can see the stuff
all know. If you showed
that's
somebody one of those, you go, oh, that's like for earthquakes.
Yeah.
You know, like now hang on a minute, because the earthquake and the big tsunami in the Philippines, that was 2008, so that predates this movie. So... We, at the very least, large populations of the Earth would have seen the readouts from earthquakes. And in fact, in the news, whenever there's an earthquake, it's one recently in Afghanistan, whenever there's an earthquake, the graphic they have often behind the thing that says, you know, earthquake, all these people like, is of a seismograph going...
Yes. Yeah.
It's not like we don't know. So no wonder I was confused when I was thinking, who's this guy then?
This is some kind of digital seismograph sensor thing that is sending signals to Robin Givens, who is Lisa, his compatriot on the nearby 22 miles away Niihau Island. At least we assume she's there. Later on, she's on that island, so probably she was. Their lab is also already. There. That's as close as she could possibly be, because there aren't any closer islands. So we'll give them the benefit of the doubt and assume she's there. But this sensor is sending the signals there. By what means? Who knows? Wi-Fi? I don't know. Not Bluetooth. Don't know what. Don't know how it's doing it. If it's internet connected or what. Koula Rock doesn't have any infrastructure whatsoever. It doesn't have phones. It doesn't have. It's uninhabited. There's no. They couldn't be getting an internet signal there. He's not showing any kind of satellite phones or anything like that. They are communicating via walkie-talkie.
Via walkie-talkie.
Over a 22-mile distance at the minimum.
Shortwave radio. Yeah.
Fucking amazing walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's why the thing is had to bury it in the ground, because it's giving off such radiation in order to talk to a satellite so that she can... look at the squiggly lines on an oscilloscope.
So, he talks to her on the walkie-talkie. He looks, we get a shot of a very, very calm little bit of sea, like a kind of a tidal pool at best, that is, it's not doing anything.
Steaming.
It's not boiling, but there is some CGI steam coming off it. Some overlaid steam generated stuff. And and Lisa, who again, 20 plus miles away, talks to him on the walkie-talkie. She is getting readings on her oscilloscope, her sensor.
Yeah.
And they are, I mean, I think the best way to describe them is they are like Trump's signature. They're that kind of jaggedy up and down line. That's what she's seeing.
Yeah.
Based on what she's seeing, not that there's any measurements on the graph, so you wouldn't be able to kind of actually
there's a slidey thing that reminded me of McCoy's med bed in Star Trek going up the left hand side.
It moves up and down on the left, but the actual reading it's moving leftwards across the screen through time so that you can see where how that's working, and it is the amount that it is showing that there's activity, he is currently experiencing quite a significant earthquake, because there isn't that much more room on the graph.
Yeah.
So if it's going to get worse, it's got nowhere to go. It's very up and down already.
Yep.
And she says, Koula hasn't shown volcanic activity in 5 million years. How is it possible? So far from the hotspot. And the Hawaiian hotspot is a real thing.
Right.
It's a Mount Kilauea is just south of the Big Island, and that's the kind of the most active volcano in the Hawaiian Islands. Most of the others are either dormant or extinct. I think there's four. So there's two active volcanoes and four dormant ones, I think. But they're where the crust comes open and the lava comes through, the magma comes through. That's the hot spot of Hawaii.
Right.
So that is it's a real thing. They looked up a phrase to do with volcanoes to make this volcanologist appear like she knows what she's talking about.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Joseph doesn't get a chance to explain why it could be possible, because he has climbed up a bit of a bluff for some reason and is looking at two of the shittiest CGI islands you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which have apparently just sprouted out of the water.
Yeah.
Which is not how that works in any way. They are... Yeah. I mean, I don't know why anyone would think that's how that works. Because obviously, the islands, where volcanoes, when they emerge, it's because there is an eruption from underneath, and the island is the cooled lava.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how volcanic islands work.
Yeah.
If they start off below, like if the crust raises because of tectonic plates moving and it raises up the crust, then yes, it can raise things up yeah. a bit. But that happens gradually over time. When there's a significant shift that causes an earthquake or an eruption or something like that, you don't get a, you know, hundreds or thousands of foot island just appearing in
just
the sea
sticking
in one
up
go.
Out of the sea.
And
yeah.
then later yeah. on erupting. It is
yeah.
the eruption that makes the island.
Makes the island. It's and the other way around. Yeah.
What made yeah. Kaula, which is a kind of crescent island, is the fact that that is what's left of the top of
yeah.
the flat top of a shield volcano. So
yeah.
it's when, as they erode or recede into the sea, then they become atolls and then
yeah.
at some point crescents and islands and that kind of thing. So the yeah. opposite has happened in like apparently minutes because they didn't know those islands were there. And he's yeah. like, oh, I think a submerged volcanic shelf has surfaced. There are new islands out here. We go back
yeah.
to Lisa's oscilloscope and see that the seismograph is showing literally exactly the same animation we saw 30 yeah. seconds before.
Yeah.
Which is,
so
I mean, they should have.
Worse.
It doesn't make any
so
sense because.
Off the charts.
Yeah. yeah, there's a point on that is on the thing that we're looking at where there was no activity because that's before he activated the seismograph monitor.
Yeah.
But that should yeah. have been gone. Should be well off the chart by now because we saw the activity as it was happening. But yeah, we see the exact same animation. Presumably, again, this is from Pond 5. I couldn't find this exact stock footage. I don't think yeah. it's a seismograph because I searched for seismographs on Pond 5 and it only had those paper ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's showing the same thing. They talk briefly about someone called Landon, who we will meet later. He's on his way, apparently, and they'll need his help running some tests. And then the broom handle that Joseph stuck in the sand starts to
yeah.
shake.
Yeah.
And
yes. So I'm still kind of confused by his geography because when he's at the broom handle, he uh-huh. looks off to his right and can see the water that isn't doing anything, steaming.
Yeah.
And where is that?
Is he
standing on?
He's right next to the water.
Yeah. Which,
but then he goes.
He has to go up
quite
over
a long way.
A dune in order to see the sea. And yet the thing, the tremor that's going on, she then says, it's right on top of you.
Well, yeah, because that's
broom
the thing.
Handle
is
shaking.
The broom handle shakes and she, well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
First of all, we get the exact same shot of the yeah. definitely not that island from 1 minute previously. And then we yeah. get another shot of the sea with even shittier CGI steam rising
yeah,
from it.
With that same bit of calm thing.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
things that look like jellyfish coming up out of
kind
the,
of, yeah,
out of
yeah.
the steam overlaid on top of the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah. Lisa tells mm-hmm. him over the walkie-talkie that it's right on top of him, which there's, I mean, that's not a thing you can tell from that readout. The readout just gives you the amplification thing, the
yeah.
reading that how,
yeah.
how severe the shaking
yeah,
is
how much it's
at that point.
Trimmering.
It doesn't tell
yeah.
you that you're at
where
the epicenter or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's apparently it's right on top of him. And he tries to run away from the earthquake.
Yeah.
On again, the island he's on is 1/4 of a square mile, so I don't know where the fuck he thinks he's gonna
go. Where he's gonna go. And if he runs too far over there, he'll fall into that little bit of steaming
water.
The
hot water yeah. apparently.
Yeah.
But he doesn't get far before he turns and screams, like, literally, like there's the kind of the attack of the 50-foot woman is after him.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. He turns, looks up, and screams, And then we get a very, very close up, presumably Pond 5 stock footage shot of some lava.
Yeah.
That, it's so that great, we assume
he throws his hands in the air.
Yeah. It's like, ah, lava.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and it's, I mean, and it's engulfed him because the radio's gone dead.
Yeah. 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 He doesn't say anything. Therefore, Robin knows that he's dead. Lisa, rather. Robin Givens. She knows he's dead.
Yeah.
And she emotes a bit.
And also, oddly, in that shot, because there's a very Batman-esque shot when she's saying, it's right on top of you. And it kind of like does the old kind of twisty zoom thing, tips the camera and zooms in. And then we get a shot of her talking into the walkie-talkie. Then we get a close-up of her talking into the walkie-talkie. And is it a Michael Jackson tribute or something? She's wearing a sticking plaster on her finger, holding the... And you think, why did nobody notice that? Why why is that on there?
Don't know.
Did nobody say, oh, yeah, no, Robin, you've got a sticking plaster on your finger. Could we... Oh, she said, yeah, I've cut my finger and it looks awful. So can we just use your other hand then?
Yeah. Can't do that. Yeah. Continuity.
No.
They'd already shot all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did try to figure out from all the very close shots of the walkie-talkies, like what brand it was, what model it might be, so I could try and figure out the range. But
the range,
But I think it's a prop walkie-talkie. I don't think it's a real... I don't think they could afford an actual walkie-talkie. So someone like 3D printed one, or what is 2014. Yeah. They like vacuum formed some plastic to make it kind of vaguely walkie-talkie shaped, because it is just kind of matte black with no markings on whatsoever. So
it's got knobs. It's probably got the rest of the calculator buttons on the front.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But the
and a chunky aerial. Yeah,
the lava shot is absolutely appalling. There is far better stock footage on Pond 5 of lava that they could have used, but even then, it only is downhill from here. It's getting worse and worse as we go along, because the next shot after Robin Givens emoting that her friend is dead is an overhead shot of a ring of presumably newly sprouted volcanoes all simultaneously erupting. And they managed to make every single element of this shot look absolutely shit. The water is shit, looks like it's just, it's not consistent, and it looks nothing like water. The volcanoes look like they were drawn on MS Paint by someone who has never used MS Paint before. It's like their first day. And
the billowing shadows are
the
all
shadows
exactly
of the
same.
Islands. Yeah, the billowing smoke is just cut and pasted from
cut
one
pasted.
Volcano onto the next, and occasionally they're smaller ones. But the shadows of the islands are somehow the worst part. They are, like, I was struggling to find a kind of technology in the past that was this bad. And I think maybe like a Commodore 64 game or something like that.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
It's about that level.
Yeah.
Of if you had to make a shadow of something.
Yeah. Where you copy the thing itself and just put it slightly under.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or it's early PowerPoint drop shadow.
No, it's way worse than PowerPoint drop shadow. Has always been much better than this. This is far worse than anything Adobe has ever been involved with.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's a composite of at least, I guess, if you count all of the smoke as one, because it is one asset.
Yeah, it's the same
asset,
one. Yeah.
This is a composite of probably five assets, and they're all appalling. It's hard to pick which is the worst thing.
I think the bit under the kind of, there's sort of cracks that appear in the middle of the, I hesitate to use it, ocean, in the ring, and it looks like the surface of a dinosaur egg. So I think
until you just mentioned that they were cracks, I didn't know that that's what they were going for. I did not get that was, yeah. I thought it was just, that was the texture that they'd got for the sea. That right. I hadn't,
but
it,
yeah.
It wasn't convincing enough for me to think, oh, clearly they're going for a cracked tectonic plate there.
Yeah, or some sort of, yeah, that's, but it just looks like a dinosaur egg that they've yeah. got ripples over the top of.
But yeah. the sea on the other side of yeah. the volcanoes looks nothing like the sea in between the volcanoes. Those are completely different
yeah.
Animations or textures that they've added.
And yeah, they're all, and the sea is all running in several different directions at once beyond
yeah, there's no the waves or tide or anything that makes any no. sense.
Yes. No.
But then we cut to the plane. This is yeah. where we're going to spend
a good bulk of
our time. Yeah. yeah. So from yeah. we cut to the outside of the plane. It's coming towards us.
Fairly big plane.
From the outside, it's an Airbus A340.
Yeah, four engines.
Cut to inside.
Yeah.
And the flight attendant, Rita, announces that they're about to start their descent into Kauai, and you can't land an Airbus A340 at Kauai, at Lihu Airport, the only airport on Kauai. But it's okay, because this plane is only an A340 on the outside. On the inside, it's a very small, narrow-body aircraft with a single aisle instead of the twin aisles of an A340. So
yeah,
probably
and it's only got about 15
this has
people on it.
Special dispensation. Yeah, yeah that's the other thing is that is the this section that we see because then the camera turns around and we see the seating section.
Yeah,
this is the only seating section we will ever see on this plane. It's at the front, right next to the cockpit, but it's not business or first class. It's just kind of standard economy. I'm not. Yeah. I don't think it's probably premium economy, although the legroom's reasonable. but there's only six rows of seats, three on either side of the aisle. Probably half of them are empty because they couldn't afford 36 actors, not after they'd paid Robin Givens and Dean Cain. So
yeah,
and, this is and the, this is the section of plane we'll
Commodore
see.
65. Yeah,
despite the fact that the events of this film would require them to interact with all of the passengers on this plane, which, if it is an A340, as it looks like from the outside, it holds like 350 people. There's a significant amount of plane beyond the curtains that we can see at the back of this very short section of plane. And, we never see any of the other passengers. I mean, these passengers are so important that we're supposed to care when they die. Yeah. The hundreds of other passengers that we never see don't matter at all.
No.
They don't factor into the story.
Half of the ones that we do see
don't have a word. But none of the other 300 passengers on the plane ever have any queries about what's going on during this flight. None of them. Yeah. None of them are involved in any kind of rescue procedures or anything that come along. That they're back there watching like Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed on the little screens in the front of the seat.
And they might be watching Airplane.
It. They didn't need to make this a jumbo jet. That's the thing. No. They didn't need to make it. Not only that, one of the biggest wide-body planes that there is. They didn't need to do that. What they could have done is made this a private plane or a small commuter plane. There are planes. If they are flying to this island, the Kauai Island, some planes fly from the US mainland, but small planes fly between the Hawaiian Islands.
The islands.
They fly from Hawaii to Kauai, and they are small planes. They would reasonably have the number of seats of actors they could afford, and all of the stuff that happens could still happen, apart from some of the crazier stuff with losing engines.
But almost
all the stuff that happens could still happen if they had just been more sensible about what kind of plane they were using.
And it would have been more convincing that they were in the air and couldn't get out of the ring of volcanoes.
Yeah.
Because we're led to think that the ring of volcanoes are these volcanoes, this volcanic shelf that's just appeared.
Yeah.
These are it. Which, I mean, you know, there's...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's this ring of, like, seven-ish volcanoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So, which is, yeah, this is where they're stuck. I mean, we're not there yet. They're not in that. But when they get into it, they can't get out. That's the kind of idea, basically. They become trapped in this ring of fire. So,
yeah,
I think it's reasonable, given that we've talked about the seating section, to discuss our plane movie that we made.
Yeah.
And how we did it better.
Yes.
Because, first of all, the bit
where she flings the curtain aside to come out and make an announcement.
Yeah.
You know, between two dark blue flats and a curtain. And it is a Plan 9 from Out to Space kind of flat thing.
Yes.
Where they've just sort of trolleyed the camera back and it's not even attached to the rest of the cabin. Very small section.
Yeah. Of plane. And when we made a plane movie, we only had a very small section of plane.
Yeah.
In fact, we only had one side. We didn't even have the whole of, you know, two side fuselage. And one of the things that meant that we did was only shoot that one side. So we didn't shoot any shots up or down the aisle. So you couldn't tell
how big the plane was, the section was.
Because, frankly, we were only interested in kind of four passengers anyway.
Yeah.
And so
two rows.
We kind of moved up and down between those passengers, between a couple of rows. And you could assume that there were people behind them and in front of them without us ever showing how few people there were in front or behind them.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. It did benefit us that we weren't doing a story that required, that would have involved everyone on the plane had it happened in real life, where they would have been requiring to know what was going on or getting involved or something happening, because the plane part was only part of the story and it wasn't.
It was focused
a disaster
on
film or anything like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because if we had made a plane movie about everybody on the plane, we would have bought a bigger bit of plane.
Absolutely. We would have needed to invest in that and made sure that we did it properly. But we used the section of plane that we needed to make it make sense. And genuinely, this was something we did. Jesus Christ, when was it? It was like
2000.
It was 1999, 2000, something like that.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at it in a long time. I seriously doubt it holds up. But at the time, people did say to us, how the hell did you get a plane to shoot on?
Yeah.
People were absolutely convinced that we'd filmed on a real plane.
Yeah.
And it was just a section from a prop house and a couple of... Did we even have? I think we had a meal cart that the stewardess, didn't we? No. I think they offered us one. We decided that we didn't need that. We just had trays.
So we just had trays.
That's
a tray across. Yeah.
Anyway, we did. We made it work with what we had because of the constraints of the story and the constraints of our budget. But it was much more convincing than this, and part of it was because we reined in our ambition and didn't try to make it more convincing by having a bigger section of plane. And what they've done here is they've tried to make do an convincing. Enormous plane, but only show us like 2% of the plane when they could have told the whole story about a smaller plane and it would have been better.
And it would be that much more convincing, not least because of the flight time involved.
Yes.
If it was a small plane struggling to exit this thing, that would make perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't make perfect sense. It would be little bit more convincing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at any time in this movie, I'm thinking, well, just why do, surely they'd be out by now. They're going, they'd be over 10 minutes, they'd be out.
Yeah, we haven't got to the bit that explains why they're stuck in this section. But we'll get there.
That's so, not convincing either.
So, as I say, we see all the passengers. So the camera turns around and we zigzag down the row looking at all the passengers that we're going to get to meet. And it ends with Dean motherfucking Kane just kind of sleeping away in the towards the back. The flight attendant, Rita, she wakes Dean to tell him that it's time to put his seatbelt on. But then says nothing to a child who is kind of kneeling on the back of the seat and wordlessly staring at the man in the seat behind, kind of threatening him with a paper aeroplane. This kid, I think he has one line in the entire film.
I think it's only one word.
Yeah. It might only be one word, yeah.
He doesn't say a thing, yeah.
But he's interacted with a lot. Like, it's... Yeah. I don't know if... He's I think he's like the, that's that the guy, the barman bit. In Bluebird. Yeah. Bluebird? Yeah. Blackbird?
Blackbird,
Who could only say lines if the camera wasn't on him. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah,
but this kid,
he
gets one line, one word maybe, later on.
Yeah.
But at this point, he's just staring at the guy in the seat behind. The guy says something amusing to him, and the kid's mum turns around and apologises. And then weirdly, because this is the thing, they try occasionally to do dialogue in this film.
Yeah.
You know, usually it's just exposition.
Nothing but
that's almost all of it. Like 95% of it is exposition. But occasionally they try and do something which isn't specifically story related, and that's when you get weird shit like this, because they don't know how people interact with each other, and
because they're too busy thinking that they're making good films, so they haven't got to go out and meet people and talk to them like humans.
So the mum turns around and says, and apologises to this guy for her son, and then says, "Hank, right? You look like a Hank." What the fuck? Who's ever said that?
What? Yeah.
not just... Yeah. I think it would be weird to say, is your name Hank by any chance, because you look like a Hank. To assume his name is Hank. As if you think you might know him.
Yes, that's what I thought. When she said it, I thought, okay, so she recognises him. And he goes, "Oh, it's Hank, right? Why? Because you look like a Hank."
Yeah, because she just reckons this is a skill she has of divining people's names from their face. She's wrong.
Yeah.
She doesn't have that skill.
No.
It doesn't come back. She doesn't try it on any of the other passengers.
No.
if they turned that into her thing, that would at least
that
be something.
Been all right.
That would be vaguely entertaining.
That would be quite amusing.
She kept trying it with all the different passengers, and every single time she was wrong, it'd at least be a bit of humour in the film.
Yeah, but that would be more like something out of Airplane, wouldn't it?
But this is the only time she tries it. So
this bit reminds me of the plane sequence in Bridesmaids. There's another thing. Oh yeah, because he turns out he's the bit with Elizabeth McCarthy and the guy that she sat next to, where she keeps saying, "You're the air marshal, aren't you?" And he's going, No, I'm not. He said, "Where'd you keep your gun up? Your butt?" Mm-hmm. He said, "No, I would." Yeah, no. And so that, and you think, oh, yeah, look at, there's all of these other films which aren't about planes that do planes really convincingly.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, ours included, it's not about the plane. It's about the heist that goes on in the plane. And it was an aside. We could have done it on a bus, I guess, maybe. But don't know. Yeah, might not get. Yeah, we just redo it. but this one, that this film that is that's the plane is the main character. Airplane.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
versus
it's
volcano.
It's in the title, isn't it?
You know. Yeah. Yeah. And they do it, and it's so shit. It's,
yes. But yeah, so he says he's Jim, she's Jennifer, the kid is Tony, and they start to bond literally minutes from getting off the plane. This has been, as they've been flying from LAX, so this is a nearly 6 hour flight. Presumably,
right.
Everyone has been silent for nearly 6 hours.
Yeah.
But it, as everyone knows, the last few minutes of a flight before landing are exposition time. And
yeah.
So because people start telling each other their life story.
Yeah, because this is the bit where, you know, they're coming into land. We'll never see each other again.
Yeah.
There's a question I'm burning to ask you. You know, because we then cut to the guy who's with glasses, who's putting his book away, ready for landing. And he looks across to the other guy next to him who's holding his hand over his ring finger. And the first question out of his mouth after the 6 hour flight, just about to get off, is how long have you been married? What? That's, you know, at least our one in our dialogue in our film was quite amusing when it says, you know,
it was a comedy moment. Yeah.
Comedy moment, you know, Charlie Jones, because it's a reference to the fact that drugs are being smuggled. And then, of course, I'm in second-hand clothing. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. That, you know, that's not, that's like mid-flight, kind of. It's over the you're having to interact because you're passing the tray of food across, et cetera, et cetera. Not just randomly. This is the point in the film. We've got to make the audience identify with the people in the so we're introducing.
That's the thing.
All.
That's what we're doing here is because when he says how long have you been married, that character who asked the question, do we see him again? I don't. He doesn't matter at any point after this.
No.
But the guy he's asking,
yeah.
The reason he's asking is because that guy might as well take out a kind of folded picture of his sweetheart,
like they do in war movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
He might as well do that because he's dying.
Yes, exactly.
That's how you know.
He might as well be wearing a red shirt on Star Trek. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And he is wearing a red shirt.
Weirdly, the choice they make, instead of making him a newlywed or like he's been married for a year and his wife's pregnant and he's hoping to get back to her or whatever.
Yeah.
Instead of any of that.
He's going to propose to her and he's just trying the ring on.
Yeah.
Or all of that kind of stuff. No.
No. But they're not married. He just likes to wear it, he says. And he says, I took time off from my auto body shop. We don't need to know that about him. To meet her for a little pre-wedding vacation. To meet her. Where do they not live? Anywhere near each other?
Yeah. I think she's an internet bride.
Hard to say. Well, they've known each other apparently, because this is the next obvious question that the guy in the glasses asks. He says, known each other long? And he says, 6 months. I know, it's a bit crazy. And the guy, from nowhere, comes in with nothing crazy about it. If you don't know in the first month that she's the one, you'll never know. The first month? Jesus Christ.
He's a lover first sight kind of man.
In the early stages of dating, that's a fuck of a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, and the guy with the glasses, you know, he's a bit of a looker. He's fighting them off with a shitty stick.
So will any of this matter? Not in the slightest. No.
And if you're going to try and tug on the audience's heartstrings, I'm just trying it out. Our wedding is planned.
We're
just having the wedding
I'm on my way to the wedding. That would be the thing. You're flying from fucking LAX to Hawaii or one of the Hawaiian islands.
Yeah.
You're going, obviously it's a destination wedding. You're on your way. That would be
that's all you
emotional.
Mean. Yeah. That yes.
But this is we've just met for a vacation.
Yeah. A pre-wedding vacation.
At some point soon we'll be getting married unstated amount of time from now.
Because I'm a mechanic.
If I can get more time off my auto body shop job.
Weird.
And
you think so? I'm at this point I'm noting down all of the skills that they've all got. I'm thinking, right, okay, he's an auto body shop guy, right?
Oh yeah, he'll know how to fix stuff.
He'll know
when things go wrong.
Unweld things, I don't know, bend stuff, check when the exhaust is going wrong. So yeah, so that's important. So I kind of noted that down. Did it come to anything? No. He gets asked. Don't we find out his name later on?
Frank. His name's Frank.
Yeah.
He's good at lifting stuff.
He's good at lifting stuff. And that's obviously Dean. And he's a lot slighter built than Dean Cain is.
Yeah.
Why Dean Cain needs somebody else to lift people when he couldn't have done it himself? That question.
All of those
wasn't
muscles
solved.
Were just was a bodysuit under his his Superman uniform. It's just
So that question wasn't the that wasn't the answer that the auto body shop guy raised the question in my head. Thinking, right, what's he going to use him for? Moving people
mostly
around.
Lifting.
Yeah, lifting somebody.
It's the equivalent of going out to someone tall in a supermarket and asking them to get something off a high shelf for you.
That's basically what
Dean Cain uses this guy for.
Yeah, but why? The other guy said, "You lift him. You're not beefier than I am. I'm just an auto body shop guy." I just do buffing, polishing, and Bondo sanding. That's my job. I don't know anything about lifting stuff. I've got a crane. Yeah. I've got a jack.
So we're about to meet the pilots, but I think this would be an excellent time to
end a cliffhanger moment.
Yeah.
Because wait till we meet the pilots.
Because there's so much more to come. Of this film.
Yeah.
And it would be a shame to blow our loads this early on.
to erupt that early. And if you if you want to, you know, watch along, it is available for free, oddly.
Absolutely. It's available on YouTube. Multiple copies of it on YouTube. I will put a actually we don't do show notes for these. I'll put a in the Patreon description of this episode. I'll put a link to where you can find it on YouTube. I mean,
I think you should
put
a link to all of them. We wouldn't. No, I mean that's the whole point of this.
I mean, obviously not for enjoyment, but
but there is none. There is
curiosity.
The enjoyment bit strong. Curiosity probably. Yes, but then what you
morbid,
should do is contrast and
morbid
compare.
Morbid curiosity.
And if you haven't, then by comparison and contrast, you could go and watch our short movie set on a plane in a much more convincing manner.
Yeah, I haven't seen it for a long time. I'm less willing to nudge people in that direction in case it really doesn't hold up.
I did watch it a couple of years ago. I watched it. I got really excited by how very good it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, your standards are very low, though.
There you go. Yeah, I quite like Blackbird. So, yeah, what do I know? Yeah. All right, then. So, yes, tune in next time when we meet the pilots and attempt to work out who's going to win with the fight between an airplane and a volcano.
Thanks for joining us this time.
See you again soon. Thanks again. Bye.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100 year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.